The sense of smell is often called the forgotten or the ignored sense. Certainly, for centuries, it's been considered primitive. It's only fairly recently that we've come to realize just how complex it is. The sense of smell in the brain is in the same place as the scent of memory, the scent of emotion. And that's what makes it so fascinating, but at the same time, totally complex.
To only think of scent as something which is contained within a bottle and you spray on your skin is very sort of shallow or short-sighted. It's like saying that visual can only exist as art on a wall in a gallery. You know, scent needs to be considered in a larger whole and how it interacts with all our senses.
We're at a tremendous inflection point as terms of innovation goes. There are some fundamental unmet needs in perfume which still need to be fixed. You know, in perfume, when you love something, it's never enough. So how do you actually cross that barrier of creating a level of love and a level of continuous liking? With the advent of the digitization, this enabler increasing the awareness and liking and selection of perfumes. Could this eventually be a medium in which you could actually experience smell?
My name is Michael Edwards. I'm a fragrance authority and the author of Fragrances of the World, the annual fragrance guide for the industry, and Perfume Legends, the book that opened up the secret world of perfumers. The key turning points. I know people tend to think of synthetics as being el cheapo, but they're not. 95% of synthetics come from nature. If you pulled apart jasmine, and there are over 800 chemicals that nature has put into jasmine, each one has got a different scent. What you smell is jasmine is the combination. Pull them apart and you've got 800 different notes on that. Now, it's not possible to extract them commercially, but once you know the chemical formula, you can clone them, and that's what we are called synthetics. For us, synthetics are the key to the marvel of modern perfumery. A great perfume almost invariably has a body of the fine naturals on a skeleton of innovative synthetics. When one looks at the evolution of modern perfumery, one's also looking at the evolution of new synthetic notes that came through. Fougère Royale, 1868, Giquy of 1889, that was the first modern perfume. Yes, it had a splat of synthetics in. When Aimé Guillain was asked why, his answer was, because they gave me an effect that I didn't find in nature. Perfume oils were extracted in basically two ways. You took the flowers, you put them in a still, you put some water there, lit a fire underneath it there. When the water boiled, the steam came off and carried with it some of the scent from the flowers. Oil and water don't mix, so when it cooled, you got the separation. It was Cherise who, in 1898, invented a totally new method of extracting this, which eliminated the need for fire, which created absolutes 100 times stronger than the earlier maceration or distillation there. The perfumers of the period were curious but cautious, because to them these notes were so strong, so potent. Coty knew no better. He just thought they were the most marvellous things in the world. When you look at French perfumery in the 30s and 40s, it's the man seeded an entire generation of French perfumery. But I must stress that all of these great names were what today we'd call niche perfumes. They were created for an elitist audience. It was not a mass market. Yes, occasionally, women would be treated to a perfume, and they would use it terribly sparingly, but largely these perfumes were created for a very elegant upper-class audience, an aristocratic audience. The market really didn't explode until the late 40s, when more accessible perfumes like Diorissimo or L'Air du Temps became available. But it wasn't until the 70s that women started buying perfume for themselves around the world. Until then, perfume was a gift. It was Charlie, the Revlon fragrance, that in 73 changed everything. Perfume is a sociological product. You can't separate it from its time. And back in the 60s, 70s, women were moving from the home to the office. They had money. And it was Charlie who, for the first time, tickled their imagination. Then came Opium, our first blockbuster of 77. By the end of the 70s, women in the West were spending more money on buying perfume for themselves than men were spending on giving it to them. 90s, by comparison, quieter. But then came sharing of CK1 in 1994. But towards the end of the 90s, things went wrong. The fact is that most of these great multinationals became under siege by the stock exchange. If they didn't fulfill their quarterly sales estimates, their share price was savaged. And so unfortunately, most of them had to resort to promotional tactics, discounting, and largely fragrance became a commodity. But under all of that, a new revolution was brewing. Artisan fragrances like L'Artisan Parfumer, started in 1976 by Jean-Francois Laporte. Or think of Annick Goutal, 1980. Or Etro, for the first time, the first Italian niche fragrance, coming out in 1989. Or the marvel of Serge Lutin with his Palais Royal Shiseido in 1992. I mean, these were perfumes that were quite different from the marketing perfumes. They didn't look for any marketing concept. They didn't tie themselves to any celebrity or to any fashion influence. For them, they were talking about experiences. And it was an experience directly related with the perfumer. Remember, even at that time, the perfumers for the great brands were hidden people. By contrast, these little artisan fragrances gave you a direct relationship with the perfumer. And so I believe that at its best, perfume can be art, emotional art.
I'm Paul Schutzer. I'm an artist who works with sound, image, and perfume. My involvement with perfume is quite recent, and it's really transformed the way I think about the other two disciplines. Aside from work I've done for installations and bespoke projects, just working on perfumes 4 and 5 at the moment. And that's been really, really interesting, because obviously I in this context, I have to work within the limits of what's legally wearable. It is a restriction, but it's kind of, you know, I tend to find as an artist that restrictions force you to be creative. And it's usually a situation in which there are absolutely no restrictions that finds you slightly wandering and a bit unfocused. So those constraints of wearability have been really interesting, actually. As people become a bit more familiar with the idea of thinking about olfaction in the context of art or in the context of entertainment or whatever, it's actually going to transform the way they think about all the senses, because I think we need to realize that all the senses are actually linked, and that when we split them apart, we're making a false division which doesn't happen in any real experience. So as the more we start thinking in a sort of pan-sensual way, I think the more interesting we're going to find just general environments, and certainly the more interesting the environments we make are going to become.
With the development of the internet has come a fascination for creating experiences, sometimes visual, sometimes artistic, sometimes perfumery. Raw materials have now become available. Flower oils, synthetic materials, they were not available for. And I think the one word that is going to influence in the future is bespoke. I think that in a world of so much technology, there's an overwhelming need, especially among young people, for more personal stuff. And the idea that you can actually create and put together a more personal perfume, a bespoke perfume, I feel will become increasingly important. I anticipate that this would go into broad distribution fragrances, where you're going to see, for example, variations that you can mix this with that.
My name is Timothy Han, and I create stories out of fragrance. I originally got into fragrance a few years ago. I was making scented candles, and after a while, to be honest with you, I got bored of making scented candles. And I was having a drink with a friend a few years back, and he sort of came to fame in the mixology world for creating drinkable perfumes. And I was just like really fascinated by this. And it's like, how the hell do you make a drinkable perfume? And he's like, well, it's easy when you think about it. What's a cocktail? It's alcohol and flavor. What's a perfume? Alcohol and fragrance. And fragrance and flavor are essentially the same thing. Try it. So I thought, okay, I can do that. So I made my first sort of fragrance or concoction, whatever you want to call it, in at home. And I showed it to a friend who was a chef. I thought, oh, she's a chef. She knows all this stuff. She knows smell. Let's see what she thinks. And she said, can I try wearing it? And so I gave her my only sample. And she came back to me about a week later and said, I've had three strangers stop me on the street to ask what I'm wearing. I think you should think about making this. So I went to a friend of mine who owned a store called Brown's, and I showed her the fragrance and I said, what do you think of this? And she's like, well, you know, I'm an old lady. What do I know about fragrance? What young people like? But it seems nice to me. And so she took it downstairs and showed it to all the staff, and they all liked it. And she goes, I'll tell you what, you produce it and we'll launch it. And I thought, oh, it's kind of a good opportunity. And yeah, being unconventional gives me a lot more freedom than somebody who has been trained. I mean, I've not gone to proper school. I have sat down with trained perfumers and sort of been walked through various basics. But I remember speaking to one friend who studied at ISEC, and I was asking her, and I said, you know, I'd really like to get sort of better trained. Would you teach me? And she sort of just looked at me and said, absolutely not. And I sort of looked at her in shock and thought, no, why? And she goes, you know, she said, I'm not doing this to be mean, but I really like your fragrances and they break all the rules. And if I taught you how to make fragrance, like you wouldn't be able to make these. She said, I could never make these because they go against everything I've been told. Myself, for example, I actually cannot stand walking into a perfume store, a perfume hall, because I find it overwhelming. But I think that as fragrance begins to be integrated into other experiences that people partake in, whether it's, you know, somebody trying to recreate the smell-o-vision or whatever TV used to be called, it had scents built into it, or, you know, going to concerts, or, you know, hotel lobbies are all fragrance now. And I think that is changing people's perception of fragrance, as well as there's a certain number of brands which are positioning themselves more as lifestyle fragrance brands rather than perfume brands, so to speak. I mean, at the moment, I'm predominantly working in natural ingredients. It's not saying that I never would work in synthetics, because I do think there are advantages to them. I'm not so much interested necessarily in new notes, but how scent can change your experience. I was speaking with one, I don't know what you would call him, a molecular chemist, and he was talking about these fragrance molecules, which are proximity based. So you could have these two matching or paired fragrances, you know, one in yourself, one in your partner, and they would smell unique. But when you came together, they would evolve into a third fragrance. Things like that are what's really fascinating to me. As people grow more and more confident in their sense of smell, because you have to remember, it's like quite an ephemeral thing. And a lot of people at this stage, I think, don't trust their sense of smell. But, you know, with all these new niche perfume brands and people trying to, you know, be more individualistic and have more personal experiences, I think they will start to trust their sense of smell more and go for more unique fragrances. I mean, you know, even when you look at the Comme des Garçons fragrances, the rise of those, when they first came out a few years ago, people were like, tarmac, really? Fashion styles now, people are a lot more outrageous, or not necessarily outrageous, but daring than they would have been 15, 20 years ago. So I think the same will happen with fragrance for sure.
My name is Felix Meyer-Harting, and I lead the fine fragrance business for Givaudan. What that means is that I have the good fortune to work with our perfumers, to work with different clients around the world, helping to create new scents for them and for our business. So we have a perfumery school that was founded in 1947, where we develop the next generation of creative perfumers. And you know, in some ways, that still has a very strong foundation of the way, even from its founding, that one has to learn ingredients and formulae and how to formulate. And it's a skill that still takes young perfumers, you know, a basic 4 years to really, that they spend in the school learning the craft of being a perfumer. And I think that still that fundamental kind of knowledge, that fundamental passion for creation, that fundamental exploration is the same as always. And we spend a lot of time you know, learning new ingredients, learning ingredients and so on. But yes, undoubtedly as well, the pupils have to, and the students in school have to learn new skills. So I think there are more technical constraints today with more product, different product formats. There is more requirements for regulatory matters that they have to be much more aware of. And as well, you know, new ingredients develop. You know, we see the development of new types of ingredients that have to be brought into the palate and they have to learn to use. And as well, what we see in processes is that they have more and more sophisticated tools. You know, so formulas used to be written by hand. Today, you know, of course, they have sophisticated creation tools, which in some ways empower them. And, you know, we often use the comparison to the animation business. You know, animation cartoons used to be drawn by hand. And in fact, then computer-generated graphics made a wonderful difference, you know, to what movies can make. It's a bit the same in perfumery, that, you know, you have now new opportunities and new processes by which perfumers create.
Hi, I'm Killian Wells, and I am the perfumer slash genius behind Dark Ride. I think my naivety of the perfume industry has actually been a plus for me, and has allowed me to, you know, think outside the proverbial perfume bottle, if you will.
I'm Bertrand Duchaufour. I'm the perfumer behind Avignon. Everything is a question of innovation, of the accord. The best way would be to find a new accord, something in the same time very strong, very acceptable, and very new. It's something actually very difficult. We can't imagine how difficult it is to find something which is the good characteristic of a good perfume, you know?
I'm Sumit Basin. I lead the luxury research and development activities for Coty. Probably subconsciously, I didn't realize I was introduced to perfume very much in my early childhood. You know, I was born and brought up in Kenya and on a farm, and my parents were sawmillers and farmers, and out of the sawdust they extracted cedarwood oil. And cedarwood oil at that time, this is in the sort of early 70s, was one of the main ingredients in the base note of perfumes. And I grew up on a farm where we were looking at different fractions of cedarwood. And, you know, you'd had to grade these fractions, one on the oil-to-water ratio, but also on the olfactive grade, to call it, but didn't realize you're doing that, because I love the idea of recognizing events through fragrances. So you'd recognize the coming of the rains through to that feeling you get when you get in a sort of in the equatorial climate where you get the dry clay and murram, as we'd call it, and when rain would hit the murram, you'd get this distinctive earthy odor. But those would be signals of the rains to come. So you grew through that, and you talk about it in a language which just became normal. So in a way, I was introduced to perfumery very much at the early days. We, as consumers, as users of perfume, have what I'd say a poverty of language, because you can only describe smell in the conventional way. Not perfumers. Perfumers can, you know, have an acute sense of smell, and they can get into very, very minute details. But consumers, it's either sweet, it's fresh. When you use visual metaphors, or when you actually let the mind imagine, this could become a language of perfumery. I think that there is a lot of innovation to come in this industry, looking at how you can take traditional strongholds, which have been us in the West here, and transform them or evolve them. But the whole acceptance of perfume as a way of life in Asia is a huge opportunity, and I see that continuing to evolve. Perfume, a sensory journey through contemporary scent, runs at Somerset House, London, until the 23rd of September.